Welcome to our podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter because that is the first place that you're going to get access to these fabulous podcasts. And to go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We'd greatly appreciate that. On the line with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio. She is one of the experts in America on healthcare policy. She is a radiologist. Her career has been helping save women's lives by detecting breast cancer. She actually read the complete Obamacare Act, so one of the few individuals in America that has done that. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Jill, another thing that you do is great analysis. And as we were preparing for this podcast, you said there is things within this whole testing narrative that nobody is talking about. But Jill Vecchio, you are talking about it. So where do we begin?
Let's start with just some very basic understanding. There are two basic types of testing for COVID going on right now. There's a viral test. That's the one they first were doing where people were sticking the swabs way back in somebody's nose, right, to get to look, and they're looking for acute viral particles, which means you are acutely infected at that moment with the COVID virus.
Okay.
There's a second test that is a blood test, and there are many, many versions of both of these kinds of tests. But this is a blood test, and it checks for antibodies. So first your body is infected with a virus, then it takes about 10 to 14 days for your body to develop antibodies to the virus, to fight the virus. So our testing, we have one for the acute, one for the antibody test, which is old exposure. That's a good thing. If you're positive for a COVID antibody test, that's good. That's what we want. We want at least 60% of the population to eventually test positive for the antibody. That's what they call herd immunity.
And that number is 60%, you said?
Somewhere around 60 to 80%. It depends on the disease.
Okay.
But different diseases behave differently. So, but that's the herd immunity that people were talking about, all right? That's a good thing. The problem is that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, federal government run, section of it that's controlling these numbers is run by Anthony Fauci.
Okay.
They're combining the viral positive tests and the antibody positive tests in their reporting. The problem with this is they're calling it, and it's being interpreted, even though it's reported on CDC website correctly, as positive tests. What they need to be doing is separating that out. It's vital that those two things continue to be separately reported, but they're not being at all. They're always combining both of those things because the people that are testing positive for viral now are going to test positive for antibodies later. They will have developed antibodies. We don't know how long those will be protective. It could be only a year. Coronavirus is weird that way. But the antibody, the number of people that are going to test positive for the antibody, which is good, is always going to be going up.
It's always going to be going up. So a quick question, though. Again, you know, numbers lie and you can make numbers lie. So let's say somebody did a test positive on the acute test, and then they're obviously probably going to go back to the doctor and get tested after they get better because the death numbers are going down. So they go back and get another test. I wonder if they count that as another positive.
Yes. Yes, it's counted as another positive test.
Interesting.
So it's important to know that just because there's a positive test, some people are being tested multiple times, and they'll have multiple positive tests. If there's a positive test, it doesn't mean it's a new case. That's absolutely critical for people to understand, but I can guarantee you that's not what's being reported in the media, because you know reporters can't understand all this stuff. Most of them don't take the time to. All they see is some little thing here. This is the number of new cases. Well, a positive test is not necessarily a new case. That being said, there are some places with outbreaks. I spoke with a close friend of mine who's a anesthesiology at Mayo in Scottsdale, Arizona. And they are having an outbreak there, but they're having an increased number of actual cases, hospitalizations, but many fewer deaths. So their death rate is very low.
Okay.
And she said she was surprised that a lot of the hospitalizations were people in their 30s and 40s. Rather than necessarily older people, but let's face it, in Arizona, it's kind of the winter time is when they have all the elderly down there, and a lot of them come back up north or wherever for the summer. So a lot of their stuff is kind of seasonal for elderly.
Did she say, are they intubating these younger patients, or did you ask her that question?
Yes, some. But she said, we're doing everything we can with therapeutics to keep from having to intubate somebody, because once they're intubated, it's like a 40% death rate.
Yeah, so you want to stay away from that.
You really want to use your therapeutics and keep them off, and it's working. So she said, we really don't have that many, and they're not overwhelmed. They're busy, busier than usual, much busier than usual in hospitalizations and ICU patients and ventilator patients overall from what they usually are this time of year. But she says they're not dying. They're younger, and they're not dying.
Okay, so Jill, since we talked about kind of our preparation call on this podcast, I've heard a couple of anecdotal stories from different sources. And so I know it's a little bit he said, she said. However, you know, I trust these. And once you start to hear more and more of these anecdotal stories, you start to say there must be some truth in there. So we'll continue to check this out. But I've heard of people that have been in line to get, it must have been the antibody test, and the line was really long. So they'd signed in, and the line was really long, and so they had something else they needed to do, and they left, didn't take the test, and then got either a call or something in the mail that said that they had tested positive. They had never taken the test. Have you heard any stories about that?
No, I haven't. I was back in Iowa, in northwest Iowa, where they have the packing plants, and there have been the outbreaks in the packing plants. So there have been a lot of places in the Midwest that have had outbreaks in the packing plants. Again, a lot of positive tests, but not deaths. There are a lot of elderly in Iowa, and a lot of people know somebody directly. Like a friend of mine, I've had three friends where I go to stay in Iowa, three friends that live in the neighborhood whose bosses have tested positive, and they had to go into quarantine. They themselves had to go into quarantine for 2 weeks, like the neighbor. So there are a lot of people who know people specifically in Iowa that have tested positive. And I keep saying, are they sick? I don't know. Is it an antibody test? Or is it the acute viral test? I don't know.
Okay, so it seems like the acute viral test, a quarantine would make sense, because a quarantine is actually where you segment people that are sick from the general population.
Right, and that makes sense.
But if we start quarantining people that are testing positive on the antibody test, now there's all these narratives out there to scare people.
There's no reason to do it. You shouldn't.
Because numbers are going to continue to go up. So the coronavirus is within the common cold family. And so the numbers are going to go up, but we want to get to that herd immunity. But Jill, what's happening is the mainstream media, I can see people getting a little bit more whipped up now again, a little bit more scared. And I think that's by design.
Right. Now, in Iowa, people were back and forth. You kind of wore a mask if you wanted to. You didn't. There were a few places that required you to wear a mask when you came in. Most places did not. But that's a constantly changing thing. It's going back and forth and back and forth. So maybe you'd like, I think the last day I was there, Walmart and a grocery store chain issued a directive for that particular area that said everybody has to wear a mask now, whereas literally the day before you didn't have to. So places are all over. But now the CDC also issued a statement yesterday from one of the physicians that says, we're not sure, but we think there may be 6 to 10 times more people infected than we can document, because they're doing about 1 million tests a day. So we don't know how many. So there could be 6 to 10 times more, that's the number of people that will eventually test positive for the antibody test, right? So if we have 6 to 10 times more positive antibody tests, but they're adding the antibody test to the acute tests, can you see where I'm going with
this?
Yes,
I do.
There is always going to be a drastic increase depending on how many people you test. So when Trump and Pence say it's because we're testing more people is why we're getting these, quote, hot spots and outbreaks, they're absolutely right. That being said, there are some areas of increased acute illness, and this is a real disease, all right? Mm-hmm. So don't discount it. You can die from it. Do not, I beg people, do not shame anyone who chooses to wear a mask. Do not. You're being a jerk and an idiot, okay? So if you choose not to wear a mask, that's fine. Don't make somebody who chooses to wear a mask feel bad because they've made that choice.
Okay, now
that's what I'm just asking people. But there's one other thing I want to say before I go into next. I was on the radio show, and I had looked at the CDC website. It's important to understand, because when the Florida, Texas, Arizona spikes came up, right? This was shortly after the 4th of July. So 4th of July, as of the 4th of July, CDC website, about 20 million tests, both kinds again, overall, 20 million tests had been done. 10 days later, the total number of tests had doubled to 40 million tests had been done. That's an exponential, that's a doubling in 10 days. So can you try to imagine if, let's say, now we've got the outbreaks in these states. Oh, let's say in another month when things settle down in those other states. Let's say now they go to Utah, California, and go to different areas of the country and do a whole bunch of testing focally. They're going to have what looks like a huge spike. Look at the increased number of patients that we have here, and look at the increased number, and they're going to call them cases, even though they're positive tests, and they're combining acute tests with antibody tests. They can manipulate testing and manipulate reporting such that we will constantly have hot spots all over the country for however long they choose to carry this on.
Till November 4th?
Until November 4th, yeah. You have to think that probably it'll all settle down after that. Except, now also think, what happens, because they're including cold-like symptoms as probable cases of COVID. Now, the idea that they're going to count somebody as a COVID-positive case when there's so much testing available, it should, in my opinion, that shouldn't even be happening. Don't you dare count this case because somebody showed up with a cold to an ER or to a doctor's office, and don't tell me that that's a COVID case when you have so much access to testing. That should not be happening, but it is. So they're still including probable cases.
Oh.
Most states are including probable cases. So if they have appropriate exposure to a hotspot or nursing home with a hotspot or whatever, if they've had exposure and have some symptoms, or they just have a lot of symptoms that are consistent with COVID, which is coughing, trouble breathing, blah, 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 i.e. they could have some kind of pneumonia or pleurisy or whatever, then that's counted as a COVID case. A case. Even though they don't have to test it. They don't have to prove it with testing. And that shouldn't even be happening right now, in my opinion. But those numbers are going to be included. Guess what happens in the fall? Change of seasons, cold and flu. Now, in some of their reporting, they are combining influenza-like illness, i.e. flu, non-tested, just symptomatic, right? They're going to diagnose that by the symptoms as well. They're combining that with COVID because there is some overlap.
Mm-hmm.
If you come in, if you have a cold and what we would typically call just a chest cold, you got a bad cough, bing, you're going to be in a COVID number, right? They're going to include all that stuff. They're already including some pneumonia numbers with the COVID numbers. They have so many different ways to report data, and they're manipulating it in so many different ways. There is not a standard protocol, and it's constantly changing. And the states are have their own leeway and their own methods for reporting things to the CDC. It's absolutely ridiculous. And they can manipulate these numbers any way they choose to achieve different, what would you call it, perceptions.
Outcomes, yeah, perceptions and outcomes. So the so just recently, President Trump came under fire because he said that he would like to receive the CDC numbers as well. So it sounds like maybe he's starting to understand what you are talking about here. And
it sounds like it's going directly to Washington D.C. from the hospitals. He's not going to get his data from CDC. The hospitals will be sending that data directly to some, I don't know if it's a new entity in D.C. It made it sound like there was no name for it or anything like that, but that it was going to be going to somewhere specific, not necessarily even HHS, in Washington, D.C., like maybe there's going to be some new entity set up to receive and analyze this data, because it's absolutely critical, and nobody's talking about this. It's absolutely critical for people to understand the difference between the two tests, the why it's so important that we separate reporting from acute viral illness or positive testing and antibody testing. That's the only way we're going to know we have herd immunity, and those numbers should not be able to be manipulated to achieve some political agenda. And that's exactly what they're being used for now. They want mail-in ballots. They're not going to be. They can't handle the absentee ballot on a huge scale. Apparently, there is some problem with the New York primaries, I guess. But at the same time, they would love for absentee ballots not to be effective, right? The Democrats would love for absentee ballots to overwhelm the system during a primary, so they can say we have to do mail-in because we don't have the capacity to manage all these absentee ballots, so we have to do a mail-in system, right?
Okay, I've always kind of thought absentee ballot and mail-in ballot are the same thing. So
no, they're very different. So in Colorado, you know, we have mail-in. Put it in your mailbox. You don't have to ask for it specifically, and then all you really just fill it out and sign the back of it.
Right.
The absentee ballots, apparently there's a lot more documentation that has to happen. The military mostly get absentee ballots. People living or traveling overseas at the time of an election may do an absentee ballot. So a mail-in ballot is kind of a statewide thing, right? So like Colorado. So we know what mail-in ballots are. Absentee ballots, I guess you have to request it specifically, which we don't have to with mail-in. Absentee ballots are much more difficult to falsify, and you don't do ballot harvesting on absentee ballots.
That's
so,
a key. That's
right.
Real key.
Right. So they want mail-in ballots and ballot harvesting. And if you can imagine, oh, let's have a spike in all of the states. Let's show a COVID spike by manipulating these test numbers. Let's go to all of the swing states and the purple states. And let's do a bunch of COVID testing right before the election, and we'll show that there's a spike and there are hot spots all over the place in these key states, right? They can do it. And then, we have to have mail-in ballots. And naturally, you have to have ballot harvesting because all those people who are going to be afraid to go out, or if you lock down areas, they're not going to be able to mail about. So we have to have people. You know, we have to be able to have people go around and collect a whole bunch of ballots.
Yes.
That's the biggest problem with mail-in ballots is ballot harvesting and people showing up with hundreds of ballots in the trunk of their car, which happens all the time.
Yes. So let's talk a bit more about ballot harvesting, because I talked to one of the recently I talked to one of the county clerks, and he basically has said that he feels that there's great, quote unquote, election integrity as far as your vote being counted. And that's important. It seems like we have checks and balances in place to watch those ballots through, and that ballot is going to be counted, the signature is going to be verified. So that there seems to be integrity, but so interesting that the states that have mail-in voting right now are your super aggressive blue states like Oregon, Washington, right. Colorado. And mm-hmm. so you have to kind of look at the big political picture. So I've been trying to figure out where, you know, where are the places where there is risk. So when you talk about ballot harvesting, a lot of people are not really up on the issues. They're not really up on the candidates. So campaigns can kind of target who they think is going to vote the way they want them to. And then on ballot harvesting, somebody goes out and makes sure that they get those ballots, and they get those ballots so that they can be counted. And so it really kind of dilutes the votes of people that are really informed and know what's going on. And I think that there's a civic responsibility that you vote responsibly. If you don't really know what's going on, I think either find out what's going on or don't vote, Jill.
And there are so many things with the mail-in ballots. I always wonder, okay, they want you to sign the back of it. Is somebody really checking that signature to make sure it's mine? And if so, where are they getting my signature?
Okay.
Where are they getting my signature? Because these days, you just sign a little affidavit thing, and you have the stuff, you're signing official documents on your computer. How often is your signature really used? The bank doesn't check your signature on a check. And they've told me that we don't check signatures.
So now
we don't have anything that we don't have any way to confirm that that is your signature. They don't. The other thing, so theoretically, right, with mail-in ballots, somebody could go around my neighborhood, just drive mailbox to mailbox the day the ballots are delivered, take those ballots out, and fill them out themselves, sign it, and send it in. And then you find out, I was supposed to be able to vote. Where's my ballot? I never got a ballot. Oh, you've already voted. Oh, really?
So on that, I did ask that question because I'm like you. I was really concerned about that. And this county clerk said that, yes, that they do have like several of your signatures that they electronically check, and that those ballots could get kicked out then. So that is where, that's where then what is really important, that people be election judges. Because those ballots all go into a different batch where you're going to have a Republican and a Democrat open those ballots and go through and compare that signature. If we do not have reputable election judges that are checking that at that time, that is a place where there would be a breakdown in the system. So, or you might have a county clerk that, you know, might not watch that quite as quickly. So if somebody does that, there should be checks and balances.
There should be.
There's risk on it.
Yes. Now, one of the other issues, there was, you know, you always hear the stories of a mail delivery person, or, you know, a mailman or a mail woman, and finding a whole bunch of ballots in the trunk of their car that they collected. And like, I never mail in my ballot. I personally take it to a drop-off place and I drop it in there myself. The fewer people handling your ballot, in my strong opinion, the better, right? You don't want a bunch
Absolutely.
Of people handling it so it gets lost. Now, imagine, let's say you're a strong Democrat mailman or mailwoman, and you're going around the neighborhood collecting the mail, which includes these ballots. People are just going to mail their ballot in and let you pick it out of their mailbox. Let's say you're going to a mailbox of a home and they have a Trump-Pence sign in their yard. Wow, you've got a dilemma. You're a strong Democrat. You hate Trump's guts. What are the chances that there might possibly be some mail delivery people who might lose that mail-in ballot?
So on that,
it's so many ways, subtle ways, undetectable, fraud in various ways.
And so to that point, I don't know if you noticed on your primary ballot this last election season, there was a window up in the top left-hand corner that said D or R or unaffiliated. So the D's got the Democrat primary ballot. The R's got the Republican, and the unaffiliated got both. Now, they are only the unaffiliated could only vote one ballot. But to your point, it possibly could be a mail carrier. Of course, this is a crime to do this. But let's also think about a nursing home that, you know, where, you know, people really are dependent. They really appreciate their staff there. They trust them. But what if you had somebody that was working in the mail room that just didn't happen to give, you know, Mrs. Jones her Republican ballot? And Mrs. Jones hadn't thought, you know, gosh, I haven't gotten my ballot. I need to contact the county clerk and see what happened to it. So these are more subtle ways to affect elections. And it's so interesting that in these mail-in ballot states, they talk about the integrity of your ballot. And there really are some checks and balances, but always there's been these underlying ways, these more subtle ways to affect the ballot. And then let's just look at Colorado with the national popular vote, Jill. So they've said, we have election integrity, your vote counts, we want to make sure, that's why we're doing mail-in ballots. And then this legislature and this governor passed legislation that circumvents the Electoral College and in essence takes your vote and dilutes it. Because it says, oh, no, 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 Colorado, it doesn't matter how we as Coloradans vote. Whoever gets the national popular vote, and there's all kinds of different election fraud that can occur in all these different states, we're going to give your vote to those states. So, Jill, what we're talking about, it's more subtle, but it's really kind of insidious.
Well, they're turning it into mob rule. And how many states, who are the states that are having all the riots? Businesses are still closed. Their economies are crashing. They're having COVID outbreaks. So many of those states that are having very poorly handled disasters are Democrat states with big populations. So if they can get mail-in voting in those states, and then they're going to combine with their little agreements like Colorado with the popular vote, now you've just turned it into big cities, heavily populated areas are going to control who's president. And we know which way they lean. They're all Democrats.
Well, you know, Trump has, whether or not you like him or don't like him, you have to acknowledge that he has brought clarity to these issues. You know, it used to be that it was the coexist, let's be tolerant, peace group, is now down there defacing property, destroying property, not being tolerant of other people's views, not coexisting with people that may see things differently. And so there's a big clarity that is coming to these issues, to these candidates, to the actual effects of these blue states, blue governors, blue state governors, blue city mayors. And I find that somewhat positive, because as Reagan said back in 1964, we are at a time of choosing. And Jill, we are at a time of choosing. And going back to what we started with this podcast, is we need to be smart about our choosing and ask, why would they be manipulating these numbers? Why would they be trying to affect this narrative? And so the questions that you're bringing forward, and you said nobody else seems to be asking these questions.
No, they're not making the difference. They're not making the distinction between the acute viral test and the antibody test. They're allowing this. They're not questioning the CDC's combination of these two together. And I think, and I'm hoping that that's part of why, part of what will come out when Trump starts up the COVID press conferences again. Do you know when that's gonna? I don't know when that's gonna be.
I think
he
is.
It will be very soon.
Yeah, I think he started
that. Has he already started it?
I think he just started that. So, question: is both the CDC and Trump going to get the same numbers? Do you think?
you know, I don't have enough information to answer that yet.
Because
I don't know, because I don't know exactly what numbers. I don't know. It sounded like hospitals, but is it also going to include all of the testing labs, like the outpatient labs, the private laboratories, the public health service, the free, you know, curbside mm-hmm. testing, or is it just hospitals? So the so I don't know the extent to which Trump's directive, if it extends to all that testing. I hope that it does. I saw the questionnaire that they were going to be using. I saw that, and they have it separated out, the viral from the antibody testing. And they ask a lot of different questions about that. So I'm hoping that they will report these numbers separately, because that is absolutely, and I can't emphasize it enough, that is absolutely critical to understanding the truth about where we stand with COVID.
So my next question then is media. If Trump only gets these numbers, they're going to say, oh my gosh, he's manipulating these numbers for his narrative.
Yeah, they'll still be reported to CDC.
Okay, okay.
So CDC will keep getting their numbers.
Okay.
But the hospitals are, to my knowledge, they are going to have to, they'll be sending to both.
I think that's a super
they'll
idea. It's kind
both.
Of a check and a balance. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the way it should be. But the analysis of the numbers may be quite different. And I can tell you who's I'm going to trust. I'm going to trust Trump's numbers far more than the CDC, seeing how they have manipulated this. They're changing the rules little by little. They're changing the rules to keep adding more numbers to the testing or presumed cases, right?
So they can continue to have
a presumed case anymore.
Right. Continue to have power over everyday hardworking people's lives and to try to affect the election.
Yeah, big time. This could have huge effect. And as long as they can make the economy look bad, they can make Trump theoretically look bad. If they can keep schools closed, that keeps at least one parent at home or something a lot of times. So it's going to keep the parents from being fully employed, the kids from going back to school, colleges closed. I mean, the implications for the economy and the election are massive. And the CDC is absolutely complicit in whatever plan the Democrats have to keep the economy closed down and to mess with the election. And then you think about Antifa running around and all this lawlessness. How many people are going to feel comfortable going out to vote in person?
Okay.
And what are the chances of Antifa focusing on certain Republican suburbs like Douglas County? You know, they could come down here.
Don't give them any ideas.
I don't need to give them those ideas. They already have those. Mm-hmm. So you see what I mean?
I do.
We're set up completely. I think it's going to fizzle out. I think people are going to be tired of it by the time November rolls around. But, you know, there could always start new disruptions, riot for something else, who knows?
Right. Well, and that is why we want to shed light on what is happening here. You know, let's ask these questions. Why are they reporting like that? You know, how is this happening? You know, ask these critical thinking questions. So Jill, you know, other thoughts that you want to make sure that we get in on this podcast?
Gosh, we've covered so much.
We have.
I would say, do your homework. Don't trust the CDC. The way tests are not cases. The number of positive tests is not the same as the number of cases. If somebody says so-and-so tested positive, what you should ask them is, which test?
Got it. Okay.
Are they sick? Which test? Because the numbers, the death numbers, if you look at the best indicator for real death statistics, you look at the number of healthcare workers that have been infected, which considering is I think it's in the hundreds of thousands, 160,000 or something, healthcare workers, but something like 500 deaths among healthcare workers. Now, the reason I say that those numbers are significant is because those are the numbers that are more likely to be the most accurate. So it's how many healthcare workers got COVID because they're in a place to be tested. How many people, healthcare workers, died from COVID, And chances are they're going to be a lot more honest about reporting a healthcare worker's death as COVID, like from COVID, as opposed to someone that's not a healthcare worker. You know, I mean, as unfair as that may be, that's probably more accurately reported. Okay. That was 0.5% death rate. And this is among a population of people that in the areas where the cases and the deaths were, these people were constantly exposed. They're constantly exposed. Now, just because you walk past somebody that has the virus doesn't mean that you've gotten enough of the viral dose from them to be infected. You have to have a certain dose of viral particles in order to cause an infection. We don't know what that dose is here with COVID, but you have to have a certain viral dose load in order to actually get sick from it. So just because you're standing next to somebody doesn't mean that, you know, now you're a presumptive COVID illness or death. So that's why I'm saying the hospital, look at the healthcare worker statistics, and I, to me, that gives you a much better idea of what the real severity of this is, what the real infectivity of it is. You look at people who have been exposed multiple times in close quarters all day long, every day. You know, that's, those are the numbers I think are more telling.
Okay, so that raises one other question and a clarification. So when you said that the death rate was 0.05%, when we hear that number, is that...
No,
is that
0.5% among healthcare workers.
0.5%. Among healthcare workers. Now, is that all healthcare workers, or is that just those that have been tested?
Just those that have been tested and positive.
Okay.
That have had positive tests. Right. So you think of how many healthcare workers were exposed to heavy viral doses and how many didn't get the disease or got it, and a bunch of healthcare workers were taking hydroxychloroquine prophylactically. A bunch of healthcare workers, especially doctors, were writing themselves prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine and taking it prophylactically because they knew they were being constantly exposed.
Okay. So when they say 0.5%, people go, oh, my gosh, we're a country of 330 million people, and, you know, 0.5%, that's a lot of people if they died. But it's important to make sure people know that this is just of those that have been tested. And then those that that number of people that are testing positive is going to continue to go up. And so now, instead of, remember when they were having the number of deaths on the side of the TV bar,
like 4 or 5% death rate.
Yeah.
And in Italy, it was like 8% death rate. But that was when there was limited testing.
Right.
We really didn't have very good testing. So the percentages were higher. Again, this is the number of, I think with the healthcare case, I think it was actual cases and not, shoot, I don't have that right in front of me. It was cases and not just tests. I think it was the number of actual cases, but not sure.
So the point is the media was running these totals on the side, like, you know, like the sports scores. People walk by, you know, my gosh, yes, scares people to death. Now, I haven't heard anybody out there say this is good news, that the number of the reporting numbers have gone up and done just what you've done. They've explained the two different, that they're combining those numbers. And I've not heard of one mainstream media person that has noted that this is good news on what is happening. Every death, obviously,
well,
you know,
it's good news. The antibody test,
right? The antibody
then
test.
We're working toward herd immunity,
right?
But that's the thing, that the people, media people, reporters, and I give them a pass on this. They don't understand the difference here or the significance of the difference. But when you have a doctor like Dr. Oz or Mark Siegel and stuff like that, I'm not hearing them say it either. Now, I don't watch every single interview they've ever done, so maybe they have. But to me, this is a really big deal that should be said over and over and over again so that people understand what a positive test means and why there needs to be this differentiation between antibodies, which is herd immunity, which is great, versus acute viral infection?
My friends, this podcast is a podcast that you are going to want to share with your friends and your family and your colleagues, because this is key, because the percentage of deaths, and each person is treasured and valued, but that percentage is probably going to continue to go down as we see these this testing go up. And it's important to understand that so you stay sane, so you make good decisions, and have conversations with your neighbors and your friends and your family, your colleagues about this. Dr. Jill Vecchio, final thought for this podcast.
COVID-19 is a real disease. It can kill people. It has killed people. It can do terrible things to people who get really sick from it. So don't discount it as nothing. It is still important. Be kind to one another. If people choose to wear masks and protect themselves, don't give them a hard time about it. I choose to wear a mask a lot of times when I go out. I'm still wearing a mask. When I get on an airplane, I'm going to wear a mask. If I'm in a crowded place, I'm going to be wearing a mask. Don't make fun of me. I'll come after you. Just kidding. but understand that. And all the studies, as they say, about masks not working is, and I have a much stronger word, it's crap. We are doctors. I've talked to so many physicians, and this anesthesiologist friend of mine, she said, I am so angry that people are discounting the use of masks, cloth masks. And she sent me a journal article, a medical study that showed that actually 2-layer cloth masks did better than a paper surgical mask for blocking virus. And now, we could go into that, but all this stuff about the size of the particles and the openings in the mask, that's fine if you want to put viral particles in a fire hose and shoot them through there, but that's not reality of how we get exposed to it. It's things floating in the air. The dose matters. Any barrier helps. People have to understand that masks do help. You can choose not to wear one. I'm not going to make fun of you. I'm not going to badmouth you because of it. But I can tell you there are a whole lot of physicians who are pissed off that people aren't wearing masks. Doctors are pissed because people aren't wearing masks more. So, you know, leave your politics behind for just a second and use some common sense about how viruses work, how infections work, how they're spread, what the testing is, and just set the politics aside and just seek the truth.
Well, that's what we do. And I am, if you make the case to me for masks, that's one thing. When you do this, use that for force. And yet, on the other hand,
right.
You are, somehow magically, the virus knows not to to be in an area where there's protesters that are destroying and defacing property. So that whole politicization of this whole thing and using force, because I have to tell you, Jill, I'm a lot more afraid of government force than I am of the COVID-19 virus. Because government force...
But there's no reason it has to be one or the other.
But it has become that, and government force has killed millions and millions and millions of people. Look at Mao's China, look at Stalin's Russia, look at Hitler's Germany, and it's government force that really we have to watch. Now, if we could have, like you and I are having this honest conversation, but the radical activist left that have taken over the Democrat Party, take these things that well-meaning people, thoughtful people would consider important, and they take it and they use it to forcefully control our lives. So that's where I'm struggling on this whole mask-wearing thing, Jill.
And I understand that. The problem is, it's kind of like, don't put off your nose to spite your face. Don't do something that doesn't make sense just because somebody is telling you have to do it. You see what I mean? And I'm just saying it should be informed consent. You have every right not to wear it, but don't not do something just because somebody's telling you have to do it.
Oh, that.
Because, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the bottom line. This should be informed consent. As long as we have, my thing is, tell us the truth about the frickin' mask. Stop lying about it. This isn't rocket science. We have known all about masks and disease and spreading viral particles. We've known this for 100 years. Nothing has changed about it. But now they've given so many different, thrown out so many different lies because of an agenda.
Exactly.
They've turned this into politics. Seek the truth. Learn the truth about the medicine of masks versus viruses. You don't need a new study to show anything. You don't need a new study. It's all there. Every barrier helps you not to get a disease from an airborne virus. Any barrier helps, period. That's truth. That's truth. Now, armed with that truth, you get to make an informed decision, as any patient should get to do, as to whether or not you want to wear this mask. That's it. But don't not wear one just because somebody is telling you you have to. That's my point.
Jill, you and I always have spirited conversations on this stuff. This is a great podcast. And be sure, you know, you're on the show regularly as well, the Kim Munson Show. These podcasts, though, I love them because we really get to delve into these issues. So I know this is going to be
a
big one.
We don't have to agree on everything.
We don't. We don't. That's for sure. And we're still friends. So Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much. And stay tuned. Make sure you watch for all of these great podcasts and sign up for our weekly newsletter, because that's where we initially roll them out, and then they're on the website. Dr. Jill Vecchio, have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Thanks so much. And to all of you listeners there, God bless you and God bless America.